Well, I don't know whether there's something more neat than this or not, but the road used to run clear up around and loop back onto the road in front of Turner's. You can't see it now unless you know where it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
You can still have a trail through there if you want to, but you, I doubt if you could get through on horseback now, maybe. But a few years ago, when they established the school and bus system, Belmont, well, no, it was before that. The road commissioner was looking at the costs of taking care of the roads.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the roads that was in question was this road. Well, this was after we were sugaring over where Belmont's house is.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to the hearing because nobody else was here. And we didn't ask to have the road plowed out all winter, but they were always willing to plow it out
mm-hmm.
when it came time to get up and start sugaring. So, we agreed that, I mean, that this was a perfectly satisfactory service.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a kind of a complaint meeting. And so I went up to support Mr. Holt because we had no complaints. We were very grateful for the service. Well, then later, you see, the boys came in here to live and both houses. And so the school buses, they began to improve the roads mm-hmm. in Marshfield for the school buses. Marshfield had the earliest, best rural back roads of mm-hmm. any place in the area. Because they really went to work on them before the buses. But nobody needed to come up in here when they first started. However, they were going to have to. So they fixed up this road, but stopped it at Belmont's house.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was going to cost such a huge amount to fix it up from there down.
Mm-hmm.
So Belmont's children walked to Ronald's house and then get the bus there mm-hmm. and go on down. But there's an excellent road over to Belmont's, but no place for the bus to turn around.
Mm-hmm.
No good place.
Did the boy, where did the boys go to school in early on?
Plainfield.
That's when you were living down in the village?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That's when the two towns were separate mm-hmm. from their school.
Mm-hmm.
They went to Plainfield. Later, all three children went to Gardner.
Mm-hmm. Let's get back to that question again, which I gave as a poor example of a question that I guess I wanted to ask, regardless of what you said, which was the role of initiator, or working to move or to change or anything else, and then having other people hook up with that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that that's been
important? Why don't you turn that off and let me think a minute.
Okay. These three committees.
This question is hard to answer, but on these committees that I am on that concern the elderly
mm-hmm.
in this state, I have thought of myself as a facilitator, mm-hmm. not an initiator.
Mm-hmm.
But your question makes me pause to think that.
Except for
the fact that I bring in the point of view of the rural people I know, whom I love very much.
Mm-hmm.
But these ones I know and love are only illustrations of elderly people all over the state.
Mm-hmm.
So I have been consulted, which is a high-class
mm-hmm.
word,
mm-hmm.
by persons in the RSVP program, in the mental health program, in the home health agency program, and even in one case on the state board,
mm-hmm.
to present answers, the rural answers to questions they've raised, which have been readily answered in terms of communities.
Okay.
So in that respect, I'm an initiator.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how much more opportunity there might be later
mm-hmm.
for me to initiate, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Jane, a daughter, whom I haven't called by name, is has always been interested in rural regionalism, she used to call it, in planning. And she worked for several years in the planning office in Vermont, in Montpelier. And she thinks very quickly of ways to get people to work together to improve a community.
Mm-hmm.
She sees very quickly things that need to be done and is very skillful, I think, in getting persons involved. So one of the things that she initiated, for instance, was the addition to the library in Marshfield.
Mm-hmm.
And it was through her office, through her knowledge of grants and through her office, that we got a federal grant to help build that building. But she got other people involved who then involved their neighbors. And about 85% of the families in the town of Marshfield contributed labor, money, or articles for the flea market that operated all summer. And we more than raised money enough to put up the buildings, so we carpeted the library and improved the lighting and have added storm windows. Well, that's an illustration of the kinds of things she sees as possibilities, not just wishes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard for me to look at Tim and myself. Of course, the college, with the help of the faculty who were at the junior college over in Barrie, who came with us and helped, we were initiators there, but so were a lot of other persons.
Mm-hmm.
He had together a group of persons who were interested in trying this kind of thing. When it comes to immediately thinking of other things that we have initiated, I don't know, except once I changed a group from working for votes to working for a consensus, which I thought was a real triumph, because I always hate to see a group split by a vote when one could work for a consensus and have degrees maybe of gray in between, but at least be all working together instead of the grays having to make up their mind whether to be for or against something. And I've done that in some cases, but that's no worth shaking matter. But how much influence that's had on anybody else, I don't know.
So you don't then particularly think of yourself as, or maybe that's...
As initiators, except for the Goddard situation, when we were a part of a group. And to be perfectly honest, I think Tim was the real initiator there. But he had a lot of help.
Mm-hmm.
He was the one that saw what had done. I did one other thing when I transferred from the College of Arts to the College of Agricultural Science. I was the first one who'd done that, and since then there's been almost continuously there has been at least one girl in the College of Agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another little tiny kind of thing. But this may not be interesting at all, but when the woman's lib business began to be so much talked about and such hot news, I sat back and mused a while about this, and at the time that I changed to the College of Agriculture was the time that girls started to enter the College of Medicine at the University of Vermont. This was back in the early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
There was a girl in the College of Engineering at the University of Vermont. There was a girl in the College of Commerce and Economics, except she was in the College of Economics. Commerce and Ec was a group of girls who really took also secretarial science and then became very able assistants to executives, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So that was set up, that branch of the College of Economics was set up for that purpose. But the medicine, engineering, and agriculture had never had people in there before. But there was no racket made about these. We just went ahead and did it. Well, at the same time, in other places in the country, I suspect girls were entering different fields. A girl graduated a year ahead of me entered the field of law. Well, now, how many lawyers there were, women lawyers, ahead of her, I don't know. But she graduated and went out to Chicago and worked as a lawyer for a Pullman company.
How many men do you think about that time? In other words, there was probably a difference in ratio. If there was one woman, how many men would graduate at that time from the law school?
I don't have any idea. I wouldn't know.
And in your class in agriculture?
I was the only one.
Only woman, but how many?
Well, there were eight or nine of us in the College of Agriculture in that particular class. The next class was a bigger one. I'm trying to picture the graduation picture we had taken. I guess there maybe were 10 men.
So that possibly your one woman goodness supplied 10% of the graduating class. I just wanted to get
in the College of Agriculture. At the same time, I learned later, there was a Barry woman who had graduated from Cornell Department of Horticulture the same year I had, but how many there were in her class, I don't know. I think a girl here and there was creeping into veterinary medicine, but I never knew one of them. And there were a few more girls graduating in the field of science, pure science, we'll call it, rather than science major in liberal arts college, that they go for state science. But I'm not sure I knew one at the university. I have to study the records of it and make that out. But they were doing quite a few things that girls hadn't done before. Even non-college girls were. But not making a lot of noise about it. And so I've been thinking about this quite a lot to in a way of wondering whether, well, of course, we weren't the initiators of this liberation idea, because Mrs. Somebody was in the federal, in the woman's suffragette, and wore bloomers.
Mrs. Bloomer.
There were several women. Was her name really Bloomer?
Yes, I think Bloomers were named after Mrs. Bloomer.
Well, that may be it. Yeah.
Yes.
But she wore them, you see. And so there was Carrie Chapman Catt, and there were other women. Now, they were 25 to 50 years ahead of us. About 25 years, I think, ahead of us. So maybe
but
this
did they have some influence on you, do you think, in some sort of way?
Did they what?
Did they have some influence?
I don't have any idea. We weren't aware of it.
Right.
I didn't think anybody had any influence on my changing my mind about what I was going to do in college.
Yeah.
And somebody said, what did your mother think about it? You know, I didn't write to them until after I made the change.
Yeah.
It didn't occur to me that that they would need to know.
Yeah.
I changed because I thought that our farm was located in an ideal place to have a small fruit farm and had a good market for them in Hanover and in Fairleigh, Vermont. And this seemed like an ideal thing for me to do. I knew I didn't want to teach school. And when I was thinking about college, I thought I'd want to be a librarian. But when I got to the university and saw the librarians, I knew I didn't want to be a librarian.
I'm a librarian.
Well, I had been 11
right.
years,
right.
you know. But at that moment, I didn't want to be in a library like that and spend all my time with those things. And So, I mean, I'm not apologizing to you because I laugh at myself because this is where I ended up.
Yeah.
And it's funny, but so this was, I thought, an ideal thing to do, and I saw no reason to talk to them about it because it wasn't going to involve their money in any way. You know, and in fact, it would make a better income for all of us.
Yeah.
The farm we were on was not what you'd call a good farm, and my father was no farmer.
Yeah.
So really all we did with it was cut the hay and raise potatoes and cows.
Why did you come then? Was there some reason that you left where you were from, that you came to Vermont?
Well, it was during the Back to the Land movement. Both my father and mother had not been at all well. When the spring before we left South Carolina, they were both on crutches. And Dad stayed, he recovered enough to go back to work, and he stayed there, but this Back to Land movement, and he had grown up in Vermont, and so had she,
and
they just thought it would be ideal to go back where the grass was green and people were people, you know, kind of thing. He was just awfully homesick for Vermont.
Why did he go down to South Carolina?
Because that's where the lumbering business went. He started up in the Northeast Kingdom here, and then he moved to West Virginia, up in Tucker County, where I was born, and I've just got the history of Tucker County here, which was completed by a woman I knew. he went down there in, I think it was 1895 or 6, somewhere along there, maybe earlier. And they had cleared stumps off the land and built four little houses, and they went into one of those, and the stumps were as high as the houses in the home. So we were settlers. We were really frontiersmen there. And then from there, when they cut off, unfortunately, this was before anybody knew anything about conservation, and there was a pulp mill and a tannery and a hardwood and a softwood mill there besides two mines. And so they just stripped the mountainsides, and what couldn't be lumber was pulp wood, and all the bark went to the tannery. And so this was all good use of what there was around. See, well, we know since then that it was very unwise use. But when that was cut off, a man who had also come from northern New England, northern Vermont, and who had been in a town some 20 miles below us by railroad, moved to South Carolina to manage that place, and he sent for Dad to come and manage the planing mill. My father was the superintendent of the planing mill divisions of these companies he worked for. And when I first came to Vermont and saw what a planing mill was, I kind of thought, well, that puts Dad in his place.
Oh my, what do you mean?
Well, a planing mill up here might have a couple men working in it, and he would have 125 men working under him. And then after they cut off down on the Atlantic coastline what they could reach economically for the company, then this company that had hired Dad down there, they were there called the Atlantic Coastline Lumber Company, but they bought a place up in Knoxville, Tennessee, and became the Babcock Lumber Company, Lumber and Land Company. And they asked Dad to go up there. So he went up there, and he stayed there until they moved, and at that time he was old enough to retire. And Mother was working at Maryville College, so they didn't go with the company.
And they decided to come back up here.
Well, they stayed in Tennessee, and then, no, he never came back up. Mother came for, well, he came for visit. And then his heart was very bad, and he went to live with my sister in Moundsville, West Virginia, where the land was level. And, oh, yeah, I know, you're asking about how we got on the farm.
Right, you said that the farm wasn't very productive and your parents weren't farmers, so why did you have
a
farm?
Was a period of 4 years when they were in Vermont on the farm, but part of that time, Dad wasn't here, only about 2 years of that time. And then he worked in the wintertime at the copper mine over in Stratford, Vermont, and because he couldn't make a go with it. And then they went back to, that's when they went to Babcock, excuse me. They came from South Carolina up here, and then Dad got a letter from Babcock asking him to come back to Tennessee, so he went.
So that your going to the agricultural college was to improve
the income from
the farm
that we were on. And then they sold the farm, so but in the meantime I met Tim.
Mm-hmm.
And we had this farm to come to and we wanted to plant berries and things.
Mm-hmm.
We did. But you certainly have a saga of a lot of things.
Do you want me to turn it off, maybe?
Right now, I want to tell a little bit about how I grew up and why I have such great interest in plants and flowers. And I have to start with my mother again, who had a little folding magnifying glass that was about an inch square, and there were three layers to it, so it was kind of tough. And she would start a Rex begonia, which you start by putting the leaf with the stem down into dirt, but the leaf must be flat on the dirt with a little bit around the edges to hold it down so it stays close to the earth.
A little bit of dirt around the
edges? A little dirt around the edges of the leaf. And you keep it moist but not wet. I've learned this since, but I wanted to set the scene. And she would take this little glass several days after I had seen her plant, thinking I was helping her plant this mm-hmm. leaf. And she would say, see what's happening right down where the stem comes up. And there would be the tiniest little green thing mm-hmm. pricking up. And then in a couple of days, there might be another one. And so I could watch that new plant grow out of the stem of the old plant. That's the first thing I knew about propagation. Even before I knew about seeds, I knew about Rex begonia.
Mm-hmm.
Then she had a little square garden, and I saw this last summer, I saw the house I had lived in, and so the garden couldn't have been more than 8 by 10 feet, probably. Mm-hmm. But I remember it as a lovely garden. Mm-hmm. And in it she had pansies and petunias, both of which grow with very little care, mm-hmm. providing you remember to water them. And we could always pick the pansies and always pick the petunias. There were other things there, and I don't remember her ever saying, don't pick this and don't pick that.
Mm-hmm.
But she would say, would you go pick some pansies mm-hmm. for me, or would you go pick some petunias? And I learned when I was about 35 years old that pansies and petunias need to be pruned.
Mm.
And when a child picks a blossom, they always prune the plant. They never just cut the stem,
yeah.
or seldom, when they're very small, and I was very small. So that that was initiation into plants, mm. the growing of plants and blossoms and flowers. And Mother always had something growing in the house,
mm-hmm.
which made the house more beautiful to me.
Mm-hmm.
It did to her, you see. Mm-hmm. Then, in the fifth grade, Miss Goldie used to have a stay after school once in a while for some kind of a club meeting, a fifth grade club.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember much of anything we did except at one time, we cut construction paper into strips and then pasted it making chains.
Yeah, yeah.
And the boys hung the chains from the top of the windows, so our windows weren't naked, bare windows.
Mm-hmm.
They had color.
Mm-hmm.
And there was something else she did, but I can't place it. But I remember her as being interested in making a schoolroom a nicer place mm-hmm. to be.
Mm-hmm.
Then, over the course of years, for instance, when the 4-H clubs were started back in 14, when the first extension service was created, my sister and I belonged to a 4-H garden club,
mm-hmm.
and we grew tomatoes. My father kind of laughed because we smothered them with care almost, but they produced beautiful tomatoes.
Yeah.
Then I came to New England and we had a garden there, and I enjoyed that. and then went on to college and took the work in agriculture with the small fruits and things. And during the summer, I had to get actual practical experience. All the boys were given credit for practical experience because they'd grown up on a farm.
Mm-hmm.
But the dean, God bless his soul, he was a woman, honey, felt that I must be able to say, I worked these months doing this,
mm-hmm.
so that I would have at the end of the year, end of 4 years, as much practical experience as the senate of the university required for graduation.
Mm-hmm.
So I worked one summer for George Aiken when he was establishing his nursery, and from which he wrote his Wildflower book.
Mm-hmm.
Then I worked two summers at Ordway Beebe's small fruit farm in Tunbridge, and that was the two summers I had to work at that chain. So I got on to things there. With George, it was the flowers and
mm-hmm.
things, although he raised small fruits too. But I helped him establish the perennials with which he did a big business down on his, at his nursery on the main road. Then, it was soon after that that Edward Bach wrote his autobiography.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember much of anything about Edward Bach's biography, except the preface where he told about his father who had emigrated from Holland to a windy island on the coast of Great Britain somewhere and planted trees and shrubs. And all the people who were emigrating with him thought this was plain foolishness. They weren't going to be there but 2 or 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And his father said, it is my intent to make each place I have lived more beautiful for my having been there.
Mm-hmm.
And that made a terrific impression on me,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
in this business of making things more beautiful. And then Edward Bach, this I do remember about him, when he was publisher of the Ladies' Home Journal, published what they called, and they're collector's items now, a yard of pansies, a yard of roses, or a yard of chrysanthemum. And these were about so high and were the twice the width of the magazine, the Ladies' Home Journal, and were stapled at the very edges in the center of the magazine so you could take them out without disrupting the magazine. And those could be framed for pictures in houses where nobody had pictures. They could even be just thumbtacked up,
mm-hmm.
except we didn't have thumbtacks, but you know. And then he also hired an architect to design a house for people who couldn't afford architects. And those plans for those houses were printed in the Ladies' Home Journal
mm-hmm.
and could be bought for a dollar if you wanted working things.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of my background for being a gardener
mm-hmm.
and for doing certain kinds of handicraft, which is all tied together to make me interested in having some color and some life around me.
Mm-hmm.
So now I have a Moses in the basket and a shrimp plant and a heather and a crab plant and I am African vine.
Mm-hmm.
And a geranium for my husband. So that's the end of that.
No, but can I ask you another question, which is again very, very vague.